Welcome to Kaput Radio. My name is Martin Jensen. Today's episode deals with the making of a monster. The narrative is written by Graham Ferguson and presented by Len Martin. Near the end is a sample inserted from a previous program of Kaput Radio called Global Banking Since 1694, and for the purpose of reference, Google Kaput X Radio number 287 to get a more in-depth presentation of the issue. And now, the making of the monster. Welcome to the show.
The creation of a monster. Forget Godzilla and King Kong. Forget Dr. Frankenstein's monster. They're fictional fantasy. But here with a real monster, lurking right here among us, right now. This one produces, and already has produced for far too long, the mayhem and destruction that is evident on a global scale. No imagination needed here, as with its fictional counterparts. The monster doesn't devour us outright. It just enslaves us. Though some of us resist. Whilst our desire to live prevails, non-compliance with its conditions for our economic survival is hardly possible. Regrettably for us slaves, the premium it sets as our life assurance policy is not sustainable. As slave master, this all-powerful entity takes care of and rewards the more compliant among us. Those with the ability to feed its appetite for its continual growth and expansion have great wealth conferred on them. Success in this field requires compliance with and the dedicated application of its monstrous rule of resource exploitation, regardless of any physical or social cost. The master to whom we've submitted our innate integrity allows no drift, no shift towards any long-term social or environmental benefits. Its number one rule provides only for our short-term survival, and that through resource exploitation. As revelations go, the fact that we unwittingly created the monster and its rules makes for the most startling of disclosures. It should have been the scoop of our recent bicentenary celebrations. It should be the most revealing fact of the 21st century. Except for the monster's faculty to divert the focus of its slaves, us, and concentrate our attention elsewhere. Otherwise, it assuredly would be the greatest scoop of the century. Our cultural and political commentators hint at planned long-term policies as an aside, in slightly embarrassed tones, hoping no one pursues the point. Practice political speakers well know that long-term policies are not possible to maintain under established fiscal restraints. None of the monster's intellectual watchdogs has yet posed the question, why the scarcity of funds? They point the finger at others whose activities are only an effect of the overriding cause. The economic returns on all government and private initiatives need to be immediate, as borrowings are time expensive. There is a per annum very costly rate to be paid on debt. Our monster's rules and regulations for economic survival are plainly spelt out for all to see. As an ever-growing profit must be made as quickly as possible, so our focus is diverted to finding the finance for repayments. Rule number one. All new finance is loaned into circulation at a cost. Therefore, A, all finance in circulation has to be borrowed at a cost. B, all finance in circulation has to be repaid plus cost. Therefore, at this point, there is a shortfall, a scarcity, as finance to offset the loan cost does not exist in circulation until more finance is borrowed into existence. Therefore, as all finance is borrowed into circulation, there must always remain an ever-present scarcity of finance. Therefore, as borrowings must always increase, the gap creating scarcity increases, requiring the need for continuous profit growth. In a bizarre twist of our slaver's rules, those massive riches it bestows upon the most compliant among us also benefit those less able but forever protesting masses, who strangely see those CEOs who are subservient and compliant as powerful beings. We, as concerned citizenry, appeal to those at the top of their repugnant heap to stop their anti-sustainable industrial activities. We have so far not looked beyond noting the corrupt and dishonest spin used by both government and private interests. The spin doctor's purpose is mostly to misconstrue and negate the validity of independent environmental impact studies, EISs, generally into mining, logging, agricultural and energy operations, or convince us that jobs and the financial spin-offs outweigh any risk to the environment. Just think of the profit in nuclear. All other values fall before the lure of money. Modern business clearly creates a servile culture where slavish adherence to the rule of profit growth, regardless of outcomes, is crucial to our economic survival. We see servile adherence by big business to the monster's rule as powerful. The word power may be better applied to a concept indicating a way out of the bind, the shackle, the attachment, the subservience to that colossally destructive rule. But first must come recognition of the rule as being the cause, as the factor that remains obscured by other attention-diverting rules and regulations. Our focus must firmly fix upon the next meal, the next payday, the next dividend, the next sale, the next growth in profit, or just as equally attention-diverting, the next protest meeting aimed at the ongoing ecological or social destructive practices we all deplore. For the monster's obfuscation to remain intact, our attention must continually be directed to an effect, anywhere except towards an examination of those rules which may reveal the cause. With this method, no obscuring curtain has been needed, like in The Wizard of Oz. Most of us imagine that those riches in the millions and billions bestowed on company CEOs, or the great wealth of the 1% of global population, are locked away and are not distributed. However, these riches must be, have to be, and are intended to be invested. Investment leads to production of some sort, requiring workers, therefore wages. Therefore, great wealth is distributed. Wages are the avenue for wealth distribution. The main cost of production after borrowing costs is wages. The value of uninvested wealth, in financial terms, diminishes by the day, by the hour, by the minute. Those wealthy perpetrators of destruction that we protest about actually fund our next meal. This cost is met by the invested wealth of, and occurs as a result of, the slave masters' regulations that drive world economies. Those regulations bear more than a little scrutiny. Even if we think our monster's rules and regulations for our economy are beyond our grasp, we perhaps should at least try to come to grips with the reality of our tenuous situation. At least we could try to understand our economy's workings. Maybe a herd of beef isn't interested in the economics of the beef industry. Just the greener grass over the fence. Oh, if only that farmer would listen to our moos. And the farmer says, if only the beef market would comply with my need for profit. In short, we have a not immediately visible, extra scary, evil set of finance-creating rules as the slave master. It can only be seen by an alarmed minority, because just to conceive of it seems to lie just beyond the intellectual grasp of our collective comprehension. Would we not otherwise denounce this monster's rules and demand a new set that benefits rather than destroys humanity? But our general mental faculties' intellectual grasp is not weak, and our reach is ultimately unlimited. It's simply been intentionally diverted. Just like the intent of the beef herd's trip to the abattoir, their attention is diverted by bales of hay. It's a neat trick, concealing our own very successful monster. Evident to most, however, is the social and global destruction resulting from the regulations it sets for our immediate survival. It compels, compromises, and corrupts its victims. It precisely sets us to arranging our own destruction. We, as the slave master's serfs, have become victims of our own serfdom. It demands have us exploiting not only each other, but our planetary home. Environmental scientist William Lawrence from James Cook University points out in his recent article, it's not just the logging and mining in our forests, it's the infrastructure, as in the roads, that's doing the worst ecological damage. As for the economic infrastructure that's either exploiting or ignoring the majority of our population, it's not killing those less able to comply and compete. It just lets them endure slowly the pangs of deprivation. Or it uses them as cheap labour to make our goods. Till we have an economic downturn, then we abandon them. All too evident is the widespread inequality, social dislocation, and the environmental devastation trailing in the wake of demands for growth and expansion. But the consequent issue of social and economic turmoil is just accepted as the inevitable lot of our human nature. A species on the way to its own extinction is the review of some hardline social commentators. And who can blame them if their view is limited to the narrow confines of the monster's rules? But deep in our hearts, we know we are better than that. Other evidence-based research shows our nature in a different light. Billions know and strive for a secure and sustainable nurturing way of living, while grappling with those imposed economic demands and restraints. Perhaps intuitively, we know two things. That humanity only needs the chance to demonstrate our caring, nurturing side, and that the world is still and could be even now a more abundant, sustainable provider. But now, our economy brings only scarcity in the midst of opulent plenty. The first world's overconsumption is enticed by advertising to waste vast amounts through overconsumption. Our economy brings to the majority a scarcity of access to goods and services. Not a scarcity of goods and services, but a scarcity of access. We routinely suffer scarcity of access to our own capabilities. That's why we are mostly unable to adequately fund and implement environmental restorative initiatives that are needed as a result of research. Not recognizing the monster in the room, we accuse others, indulge in name-calling and self-righteous angst. We reiterate tunnel-visioned, repeatedly observed facts that reveal nothing but effects. The iterated symptoms of the cause, of which we are, so far, oblivious. As for the monster, all this social upheaval is essential to its protective armouring. Its demands create a competitive, combative culture that fosters dissent, and our attention is then fixed on the competitor, the opposition. Every nuance in our attempts at global multicultural cohesion is adversely influenced by the need to compete, contest, and confront for every dollar. The monster has clearly laid out a set of rules for our immediate survival only. Ruthless, assiduous adherence to these rules guarantee short-term economic survival for a minor proportion of our global population at the expense of the global majority, for them to live in poverty. Imagine, if you will, a simple misconception of the meaning of money that becomes an all-powerful mega-force controlling and influencing culture, philosophy, and the destiny of all humanity. a colossus, formed by a colossal ignorance on our part, allows a destructive parliamentary legislated charter on finance, in July of the year 1694, to construct a set of strict rules of commerce that must be obeyed under that chartered law.
Here is a sample from a previous programme to fill you in on the Charter of the Bank of England.
The Charter was signed on the 27th of July 1694. Since the end of the 17th century, the bank has managed the government's accounts and it's made loans to finance spending in times of both peace and war.
In what things they may nevertheless deal. Provided that nothing herein contained shall anyways be construed to hinder the said corporation from dealing in bills of exchange, or in buying or selling bullion, gold or silver, or in selling any goods, wares or merchandise whatsoever, which shall be really and bona fide be left or deposited with the said corporation, for money lent and advanced thereon, and which shall not be redeemed at the time agreed on, or within 3 months after, or from selling such goods as shall or may be the produce of lands purchased by the said corporation.
And now, back to the making of the monster.
Nature, as we know it, is struggling to survive everywhere. Our very human nature is struggling with its identity, as our humanity is held tightly in check by those rules set out for our immediate survival. Our behaviour is controlled by the mega power of a set of monstrous rules. It is felt by billions, and its cruelty is excruciatingly painful to witness, let alone having to endure. The ongoing suffering, deprivation, and discontent through poverty is simply appalling. A set of inhumane rules of finance that we've elected to run our economy are the cause of our suffering and poverty, not human nature. It is an arbitrary and artificial construct that we have unwittingly installed. The poorest of people suffer extreme deprivation because they haven't the funds to access the necessities that would offset their hunger, lack of hygiene, or disease. A proportion of humanity continually suffers excruciatingly lethal loss through war. Under that monstrous set of rules, though it is seemingly needless, war is a necessary adjunct to the West's economic prosperity. We live in two worlds at once. One where war and our armaments industries are an essential component of our economy, and the other where the cost of destruction is seen as a loss of money. One where money can be wasted, and the other where money spent is seen as a fiscal stimulus, especially through reconstruction after the devastation of war. Excessive production issues forth into the marketplace in vast quantities, funded by excessive borrowing, recouped by massive consumption, which is then followed by prolonged bouts of economic constipation, which is eventually relieved after a large dose from a stimulus package is injected into circulation. Of course, we, you and me, we don't do it, do we? We don't fire lethal weapons. We let others do it for us. We must let those who keep us alive, those who provide our income via any industry, clean or dirty, protect their, and therefore our, interests in the world of industrial enterprise, whatever and however lethal the product. Expansion and growth are mandatory, they are law unto our present slave master and ruler. Amen.
Well, you heard The Making of a Monster, written by Graham Ferguson and presented by Len Martin. You also heard Jennifer Adams from the Bank of England tour guide. If you wish, you may Google Kaput X Radio and download show number 287, Global Banking Since 1694, for more in-depth understanding of the significance of this charter of the Bank of England with commentary by Graham Ferguson. You also may find other programs of similar themes. Just check the playlist of 326 programs as of now. We hope you enjoyed the show and will meet us again with more Kaput Radio.